This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. After yesterday's tragic news in Minneapolis, what do we do? This scenario happens far too often, and the same questions keep coming up. Joining us is a safety expert, Sam Rosenberg, who wrote Live Ready, A Guide to Protecting Yourself in an Uncertain World. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
You probably, like most of us, immediately say, oh, no, not again.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, these things are horrific. And, you know, you, as a decent person, you just can't be, you can't help but be powerfully affected, especially given the way this has been for the last 30 years, really escalating.
That said, we were discussing earlier this morning, we come up with the same questions and honestly, very little answers.
Well, you know, there's the same questions. I've talked about this issue for the past really about 20 years, Larry, and I've been proposing solutions and working with everyone from workplaces to school districts to individual families about this. And, you know, one of the problems that we have is there's a certain level of inertia here where these events, whether we want to frame it this way or not, become politicized immediately. On the one hand, people start to think about it as a gun control issue. On another hand, they start to say it's a mental health issue. And reality-wise is both perspectives are truly missing the mark in terms of how to identify in advance these kinds of actors who are and people who are planning or thinking about committing mass homicide and what the real indicators are that we're looking for. And also, we're missing the mark on what has to happen from a true security basis. And those two factors are very, very frustrating. In a nutshell, you know, when most people think about violence of this sort, they want to think of it as something that is an anomaly, something that is random. But when we call it something that is random, we are saying it is unpredictable. And what we're saying, if it's unpredictable, is that, that what responsibility do we have towards stopping it or getting ahead of this curve? But violence of this sort is not unpredictable. It is a process, and it's a process almost as predictable and observable as boiling water if you know what you're looking for. And the key factor here in terms of people who do this kind of mass shootings, they all fall into a very, very similar psychographic, meaning that there is no real demographic. You know, they come from all walks of life, all socioeconomic backgrounds, genders, races, all that kind of stuff. What we're talking about here, though, is a personality type. And functionally, when we see the similarities, it all starts with a concept of character disorder, meaning people who inherently simply do not take responsibility for their actions. And they look at the world through the lens of themselves being a victim, and they feel justified in their level of violence to get their message across. I've always said that it's not that they're just mad. They're mad, and they want everybody to know why they're mad. So one of the most classic things that happens in the aftermath of all of these incidences is police and the news media and the government saying a motive is unknown at this time. And the reality is it doesn't take a big stretch to see that there's always a manifesto. There's always some kind of, as the FBI calls it, a legacy token left behind by these mass shooters and these active killers to say, this is why I did it. And very often it always comes down to some kind of very common pattern like we see here of anger and resentment towards a specific group or individual that they believe to be responsible not only for all their troubles, but as they see it, all the world's problems. And when we see that coupled with a belief that they are in fact superior to that, you know, this kind of persecution complex tied with this superiority complex, we have a chemical cocktail that can explode into violence. Character disorder in general is the root of the problem. And what that is not taking responsibility for one's problems. You know, they see themselves as a victim. They blame others for all of their issues, and they simply refuse to take and accept that they could have some contribution to the challenges or the difficulties of their life. And that really is at the root of the issue. And the problem is that most of the active shooters that we see do not typically, especially the juveniles, don't typically demonstrate criminal pathing or juvenile delinquency the way we would see other sort of folks having a hard time in society exhibiting problematic behavior and alerting authorities to those behaviors. So what we really have to get good at is teaching people how to spot the indicators, particularly the eyes and ears of our society, people like teachers, people like, parents, how to spot the warning signs that someone could be heading down a dark path and get them the proper intervention. And intervention does, in fact, work.
We're with Sam Rosenberg, security expert.
Sam, I hear you saying something here. If I could water it down, it's like they're coming for us. We need to be going after them before they do that.
Yeah, and I don't want to call it like we have to be going after them, but essentially what we have to do is we have to get aware and alert to what the true warning signs are that someone is not just hurting, but someone is hurting in a way where they could lash out violently and see violence as the appropriate or only solution to their problems. And intervention has to happen. And I'm not suggesting that that needs to be incarceration or it needs to be some kind of institutionalization in a mental institution. What I'm suggesting is that there is a movement of thought, if you will, and action that takes the form of what is classically referred to as behavioral threat assessment. And what that is looking at the totality of someone's circumstance and behaviors and saying, okay, this person seems to be moving in a direction that is quite similar to or parallel to others before them who have similarly lashed out in this way. How do we get in front of that and stop them from moving down that path any further? And how do we deflect them off of it? It is very intensive, very labor intensive to do this. It's very technical. Unfortunately, most people in society, law enforcement, even on the front lines, are not really being trained in this kind of thing. It's complicated and it's hard. And that's one of the challenges. But the key here is there's really two sides of the equation, Larry. Prevention and also security, right? And one of the biggest issues that we have, and it astonishes me as a security professional who spent my entire life trying to get people to understand both the preventative side and what factors you have to do to be able to protect yourself. There is a greater over-reliance on law enforcement intervention than most people want to admit. You know, organizations, whether they're schools, workplaces, have a tendency to simply push this off and say, isn't this the job of law enforcement? But the police are simply not going to be there when you need them. They're going to be coming as fast as they can. You have, as an organization, you have to take security as your own inherent responsibility. It's good to have those lifeguards, but we need to know how to swim. And, you know, organizational security is not complicated. It's just a simple matter of a process. You need to know where you're vulnerable. You have to plan for those vulnerabilities, train your people what to do in the event of an emergency, and have in place the right security measures. Teachers shouldn't be responsible for securing a school. The students should not be responsible for securing a school. Both of those groups can contribute to prevention in terms of knowing what to look for and how to alert higher ups as to what's going on with their peers, for example, or their students. But security must be a priority for every organization, particularly vulnerable organizations like schools, places of worship, things like that. And when I'm talking about security, I'm talking about legitimate security, meaning armed responders who know exactly how to respond to a critical incident on site and vigilant to protect that perimeter.
Sam Rosenberg, Live Ready, a guide to protecting yourself in an uncertain world. We'll talk again. Appreciate your time this morning, Sam. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
Very important conversation. And to your point, Paul, thinking of what Sam's saying about is doing as much as you can to target or identify, I should say, individuals who may be in that group. There's where your artificial intelligence that you pointed out, it as has to play a factor.
I can't imagine how that couldn't be helpful in locating people who have some of the characteristics that Sam is outlining, and how that behavior shows up in social media, how that behavior shows up in other ways. Very interesting.
I believe you're right. Yep. There's, and I'm sure some of that is underway.
But they are coming for us, and we need to be looking out for them, is, I think, his message.
Through this Labor Day weekend, we're going to announce our Lifetime Achievement Awardees. We have two this year in different categories for their contributions. For our Hometown Heroes event, which is Wednesday, October 15th at the Rivers Casino Event Center, and we'll announce those again Tuesday morning. Paul, you're going to be enjoying vacation next week. It's nice to know you're going to have the chance to sleep in, that at very least.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you did nothing else.
Well, I have the feeling I'll still be waking up at around the usual time, because that's just kind of burned in. But the nice thing is, you know, if I don't want to get out of bed and just go back to sleep, I can do it.
Yeah, so that's interesting, because you get up at, what, 2?
Mm-hmm.
And most people are just settling in for an hour or two.
Right. I'm basically 5 hours ahead of all the normal people. So my 2 o'clock in the morning is really my 7 a.m.
And what time do you usually turn in?
Around 6 to 7 o'clock, which would be 11 or, you know.
Wow.
See?
How do you do that in the daylight in the summer?
Well, I know. Blackout curtains are helpful.
Yeah, so you live like Elvis, is that it?
And that's nice. You're getting a good full 7-8 hours.
I'm trying. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't work. It didn't last night.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest with you. What's going on in Minneapolis kept me awake for a while.
Yeah.
Woke me up.
It's a hard one.
Yep.
Yeah. And I know that people want answers. It's, some people just turn it off completely, and I understand emotionally it's hard. And the conversation we just had with Sam Rosenberg, a security expert, I thought he detailed very well about, because people want to know what can we do, because so very little has been done since.
When he was talking about the specifics in terms of the motivations of the shooter, the makeup, the personality, the behaviors, the inability to take responsibility, all of this. I mean, the faces of some of the shooters popped up for me almost immediately,
yep.
including the one in Butler.
The chemical explosion. That, to me, I'm a visual person, created the perfect visual for, he's saying all those things pile up eventually and they just, they do it. They don't, logic goes out the window, and they just do it.
I think he's right. I really do. I think that one of the biggest solutions to our problem is not the debate over whether we have to have more security, or if it's a mental health issue, or if it's, you know, getting rid of all of that. I think that if you can look for these people and find them, you know, and you know, point them out and help get them help and cut them off. If this person had been exhibiting some of these behaviors and somebody recognized it, and then they found out they were purchasing weapons, right?
And doesn't that mean like a class? Like, you know, you have to take health class. Just implement a class in each grade. You don't skip a grade. You have to take a class.
Well, and I think something for parents as well.
One of the things I keep thinking about, what you said about artificial intelligence can scrub the internet and identify potentially violent posts. Now,
right,
there's
true.
A level of protection of speech up to a point, but if in this case, this shooter, this 23-year-old man who used to go to that school, posted an 11-minute video of a psychotic rant about an arsenal of guns, his manifesto writings, laughing maniacally.
Yeah. And I wonder, by the way, to what extent bullying might have played a role in this.
Right.
A feeling of alienation and hatred toward the school itself and its students, regardless of how old they are.
It's just a subject that you know is coming up again. And it's, this one is unique in the fact that it was in a Catholic church on a Wednesday morning with children celebrating the return to school.
You know, yeah, it's... And the fact that the gunman's mother, you know, worked at the school for several years as a secretary is also very troubling.
And think about Uvalde, Texas. How many dozens of kids were killed in that incident? And that was a completely different scenario. Or here in Pittsburgh with Tree of Life, where people on a Saturday worship thinking this is a sacred, safe space. It unsettles everybody to some degree, even if you tend to push it out of mind. I understand that. If it upsets you emotionally, I understand that too, because you want to take some action to do something to help. Getting ready for a holiday week. Unofficial end of summer, Labor Day. The weather looks good. And every Thursday at this time, if you just joined us after a summer hiatus and getting the kids back to school, we've got the great Dr. Mike Hutchinson with us from Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry, and on our live stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company and our new KDK Radio YouTube page. Doc, good morning.
Good morning. How are both of you doing?
Get ready for the weekend. Mentally, maybe some people have already checked out.
Right? I'll say.
College football starts.
All right. So among all the things you do a podcast also. And so you get a lot of great questions from people. And I want to start with Lucy from McCandless, who says, Dr. Mike, we just adopted a senior dog and want to take her on gentle hikes. Are there any special considerations for older dogs outdoors?
Yeah, great question. I always tell them choose shorter, shaded, and level trails for older dogs and go at their pace. Bring plenty of water. Don't overdo it. Watch them for overheating and make it fun for them. You know, those kinds of activities I love. This is the weather to get them out in, but just be careful. Watch them and maybe speak to your vet. I don't know how senior you're talking about. Speak to your vet if it's very senior to make sure it's appropriate. But just remember that, level, shaded, and shorter.
Are you talking about me or the dog?
The trail.
Thank you.
Dr. Mike, you know, we have great dog walking weather. It's a perfect time to be outdoors. So Gabe in Dormont has another hiking-related question. Is there any equipment for smaller dogs or safety tips that you recommend for the little breeds on trails?
Yeah, this is a common question this time of year. For the smaller dogs, I always recommend keep them on a harness, never let them off because people lose their dogs that way. All of these dogs should have permanent ID on them or identification if they do get away. And then make sure you have plenty of water, maybe some booties for them if it's a rough trail, and just to keep them comfortable. And then again, watch them and see if they're enjoying it and don't make it too long because they generally don't like the longer walks.
We've got a question from Caroline in Brentwood. What's the best way to travel by car with a cat? We want to make a road trip as stress-free as possible. Sincerely, Caroline asks, and I know firsthand, Doc, my son and his wife have a cat. Every time they tell me when they put it in the car, it's meowing and it's not happy.
Yeah, it'll start making it crazy. So I have advice for both of those. In all cases, you want a well-ventilated carrier, sturdy carrier, that you can fasten to the seatbelt in the back seat so that it doesn't get loose. God forbid you get into an accident. But and then put their comfortable blankets or toys that they like in there. Take water and food with you just in case. And there's a product called FeelAway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y, FeelAway, that you can spray onto their blankets, not onto the cat, put them in there, and it has a very comfort. It's a comforting pheromone from the mother. It works very, very well. And if they're making that kind of noise all of the time, speak to your veterinarian. They can give you a sedative that will help dramatically. Typically, we use something like gabapentin, and it does work very, very well in cats. So speak to them if your cat does yowl the whole way. My cats do the same thing. I bring them down to the clinic, and I hear them the whole way. Can't drown it out.
Dr. Mike, Nora in Edgewood wants to know about the dog who pulls on the leash every time they go for a walk. She wants to know, do you recommend a harness or another method?
You know, I like them both. There's no-pull harnesses. It depends on the size of the dog. If it's too big, if it's a big dog, those no-pull harnesses sometimes aren't enough. It pinches them a little bit, but they still pull you through it. So in those cases, I recommend the no-pull head lead. It goes over their nose, and when they pull, it gently brings their head down, and they don't like that. They like to see where they're going, so they automatically back off, and then their head comes back up. And then reward, you know, take some food, you know, treats, and reward loose leash walking. Incentivize that kind of walking. If they're doing it right, you know, commend them. Positive reinforcement goes a long way. But those both will work well. The you know, pinch harnesses and the head, the one that goes over the nose is a really good one. That was developed by a veterinarian out in Minnesota years ago, and it still to this day works fantastic. And it doesn't hurt their neck or anything like that. It just, you know, prevents them or, you know, tells them if you want to look and you want to see and you want to enjoy, which they do, don't pull so hard.
Dr. Mike, you've just answered your 1,000,000th question. I'm curious if you tabulated how many questions you have answered over the years between being on with us, TV, podcasts, letters, in person. It's got to be way, way up there, Doc.
You know, I just found in one of my old archives 190 pages of questions and answers. I was going to compile them in a book at one point, and I just never got to it. And I just happened to find that. And it's funny, over the years, the questions are repeated over and over because we all have similar questions when we have pets. So it's it probably is 1,000,000 questions, but a lot of them were repeated.
All right. We'll be reaching out to help you produce the book in the future. Meanwhile, okay. What are you doing this Labor Day weekend? You hanging out with family?
We're hanging out with family. The grandkids are coming up. It's just, that's one of my favorite things in the world. So it's looking forward to it.
All right, Doc. We'll catch you next Thursday. Thank you. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Everybody be safe. Take care.
The great Dr. Mike Hutchinson of Animal General. You can reach out at animalgeneral.net, and we have a link at kdkradio.com. And Paul, I know you, like me, enjoy our visits with the good doc.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he was talking about the different leads that you can use with a dog. And what you didn't hear him say was that he doesn't recommend a collar, you know, and hooking up a leash to a collar. If you've got a dog that pulls a lot, that can crush the trachea.
Yeah, a little harness.
Right, but safety, the harness is the way to go, yeah.
To uncover the full scope of what happened, to try and identify a motive why it happened.
That's Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara in the wake of yesterday's mass shooting at a Catholic school.
And this shooter had posted an 11-minute video on YouTube, which shows his manifesto and his deranged behavior, psychotic behavior. And we'll share some of the details of that, but it's very, very disturbing and clearly somebody who intended harm for children.
Last night at St. Louis,
the Pirates take a 2-1 series lead with a 2-1 victory over the Cardinals. Bubba Chandler pitched 4 scoreless innings. He earned his first major league win.
Yeah, in his first appearance, he got his first save. So that's the first time in how many years? 1989 in Major League Baseball that a new pitcher had a save first, but backed by a win next.
Awesome pitching, too.
He's a special player.
He's moving the ball like Paul Skeens does in his own way. Savannah Bananas. They're going to play 2 games at a packed PNC Park on Friday and Saturday, and a couple of players are from the Pittsburgh area.
Yeah, Ryan Cox of Aliquippa and Alex Ziegler of Butler both played in college and both pursued careers in the majors, but they end up in this amazingly popular entertainment sphere where they get to do both.
I mean, the ticket prices are out of this world.
Yeah, that's tomorrow and Saturday at PNC Park and plenty of activities planned around it. Tough to get a ticket, though, if you don't have one already.